as of 2024, 51% of traffic on the internet is said to be non-human.
Truth is no longer a social construct. Reality is a social construct.
There was fear of picking the wrong version if you signed up to be a Christian. So I thought.
We are here with Matt Whitman on the FLBC podcast. Matt, welcome to campus. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, man. I like it here. It's nice to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and what brought you to campus.
Sure. We have three kids. Married to my wife, Camilla. We've been married for good chunk of time now. We got married in the late 90s when we were kids in college ourselves. We went to Trinity College in Deerfield. It's a part of the Evangelical Free Church. Or it was. It's closed. It is what it is. Yeah. Offered without comment. I'm sad about that. So I guess it's not offered totally without comment.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people sad about alma maters closing these days.
It's a thing. It's happening. Yeah. The world's changing. That's, I guess, why I came here and what I was here to talk about with the whole digital wisdom thing. But I was a pastor for a long time in the Evangelical Free Church, and then somewhere along the way started making stuff on the internet, and for whatever reason, people liked it, and I ended up having to pick. So I pastored for a long time, and now I guess I internet full-time.
Yeah, it's interneting full-time. It was interesting to hear you talk about that, particularly with the topics you were covering with our students, and we'll get to that in just a bit. But tell us about your internet presence in its various forms.
Sure. I suppose I started about 12 years ago with a thing that I called the 10-Minute Bible Hour, which is a ridiculous name. I understand that. That's intentional. It's kind of a riff on the old-timey media, the old-timey radio Bible Hour kind of thing. But it's the internet, so I'm not committed to a format. So maybe it'll be 10 minutes. Maybe it'll be an hour. I don't know. But I was pastoring at a church in Wyoming, a pretty beautiful town, very remote western Wyoming. So if you wanted to go to Home Depot or on a big grocery run, that's a 5-hour round trip. As a result, a faithful attender at our church might only be there 2 or 3 Sundays a month just because of how much you have to drive in that part of Wyoming. Well, I wanted to teach straight through books of the Bible, and I wanted everybody to stay up to speed and not despair and quit attending because we missed the last sermon. Now we're not up to speed. So I started making this 10-minute Bible Hour thing for my church where whatever passage we were working on, I would just try to do the fast version of it and make it fun, make it funny, just get the gist. It's not going to be the sermon.
Yeah.
It's a quick version of it. Well, then pretty soon the internet started to like it more than my own church. And gradually that grew into other things. I started making other kinds of videos. I started doing a podcast with a buddy of mine who does internet stuff as well. His name's Destin. He does a show called Smarter Every Day. And we started doing
That's a huge show.
He's done great. And it should be. I mean, it's one of those places where actually meritorious stuff has thrived on the internet. Oh, yeah. His stuff's wonderful. All except for the podcast he does with me. That's just mediocre. We do a Two Dudes Talking podcast. We've done it for a long time. It's called No Dumb Questions. And then in 2019, I reached a point with YouTube where, the video side, it takes so long. It's so much more work. And I could tell that the rhythm that made sense to the audience was more like every day than once a week. So I started a podcast version, the 10-Minute Bible Hour podcast. And I thought, well, this will satisfy, a few people who'd kind of like to chip away at a book of the Bible a little bit each day instead of once a week. And quickly, that took off and kind of became the thing that, it wasn't that the content was different. It was just the format was different. It was a better fit for people's lives. So people started to slot that into their normal routine, and it has kind of become a thing, and that's pretty fun. So like the main part of my job at this point in life is I sit down every day, and each season of the podcast is we pick a book of the Bible and we learn about it together.
And this is your full-time
chip
job.
Chip away. That's my full-time job.
And you're not really selling ads, so to speak. Like, it's not this episode of The Apocalypse of John is brought to you by Zondervan.
No.
Well, speaking of Zondervan, sorry, that was completely random. You got a book coming out, too.
Yeah, there's a book, too. The book's called The Lightning Fast Field Guide to the Bible. It's exactly what it sounds
like. Is that your title or theirs?
That's mine.
Okay. A lot of times they don't let you do that, but it fits.
Yeah, I think it works. I mean, I workshopped it with them. I mean, it wasn't like you know, we landed on something we thought would make the point, but that lightning bolt thing, mm-hmm. you know, it's built into all of my branding and my logos and stuff, you know, because it's fast.
It's fast.
Yeah, okay. But it's not fast. Okay, we so took 800 episodes to get through Matthew. Yeah. It's just that each episode was fast, but cumulatively, it's the farthest thing from fast.
Yeah, that's great. That.
So you get the Bible and the hour, right? Or the 10-minute exactly. and the hour. Yeah, yeah.
So I think the first time I ever, I heard of you before I heard of you, before you, you know, Andy Coyle is the connection probably from rep, and known Andy, coached him in basketball forever.
Oh, all right.
So, okay, but I, he'd mentioned you like I should know who you are. And then I went to YouTube. And I saw the video, you know, visiting a Catholic church or visiting sure. a whatever church. And that's, and I had seen those because some of those got some significant traction.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, was that the thing that put you on the map or were there other things that kind of blew up?
I haven't thought about that a lot. Well, I suppose the stuff I did before that on YouTube, some of that did pretty well. I did a series called Nuts and Bolts of the Bible. And people seem to appreciate that, kind of a plain language explanation and maybe 30 or 40 videos of what the Bible is, where it came from, how it happened. You know, I was making those in the age of new atheism and Reddit atheism in the 20-teens. And so just sort of gently, ironically picking each of those understandable questions people might have about the reliability of the Bible and how it happened and speaking to what the reality of the situation was, that seemed to happen in the right moment, I guess. And then I think the next question that people had was in the late 20-teens when the new atheism movement was beginning to fizzle or just starting to wobble for the first time. Well, one of the big objections people had to faith at that point was, okay, so let's say there is a God and let's say Jesus is his son, God in the flesh. Still, how would you know which version of it to do? There are so many versions. They all think they're right. Their loudest spokespeople on the internet are very grumpy. None of it's particularly appealing, but I'm interested in God. There was fear of picking the wrong version if you signed up to be a Christian. So I thought, all right, we'll just go to the church, you know, go to each of these churches and find somebody I like who I think can explain what they're going for well. And we're going to steel man their position.
Yeah.
So not only is this what Catholicism looks like, but the dude who's telling us is competent, likable, frank, willing to get after me a little bit, which I think is good internet. And the building is beautiful. And basically, I spent, you know, whatever I did there, two or three videos with that guy, having him tell us why Catholicism is beautiful and implicitly having us show us here's what Catholicism could make a person look like, you know, because the person I'm interviewing is kind of a sample case, a test case of what this does to you. So I did that with Orthodoxy, Catholicism, the Missouri Synod Lutheran. That was great. I did that with a guy named Will Whedon, who's just wonderful. He did a spectacular job. Yeah, Presbyterians and Baptists and just anybody who was willing to roll with me on that. A bunch of Anglican, Episcopal
Will Whedon
stuff.
Did a good job on that one. Yeah, that's good. Super. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned Steel Man.
Yeah.
So we talked about Steel Man, Straw Man, and Kool-Aid Man.
And I've never heard those three together, but yes, so, I guess we did.
Okay, so Straw Man, I think people are pretty familiar with. So you can't beat up the idea, so you make a caricature of it and pummel it.
Yeah, you make a hay boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you said Steel Man, by contrast.
Well, I mean, the idea there is the most charitable articulation of somebody else's position. Like make the least assailable version, say what they would say, anticipate how they would defend their position and articulate it the way you would want yours articulated by an outsider.
And so, we do just the opposite typically. So, you know, I would, you know, whatever I think your theology is, I would try to find some way to contrast it with Lutheranism because, you know, I'm right. And
right.
And then you beat it up. And I think that's a very typical.
Okay, well, let's do it. Let's play the game real quick. I'm going to give you a group.
Okay.
And I want you to steel man them and straw man them.
Okay, let's
do it. We can work together to
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right.
And then we'll talk about Kool-Aid Man later.
Okay.
It's not related, but it's a fun mental picture for people.
All right. I'm keeping a pin in that.
Age.
This is going to be fun. Okay. Non-denominational large size churches, straw and steel. Go.
Straw. Can I do straw?
You get straw, okay. I get steel.
Non-denominational large churches, the general American evangelical church. It just comes down to moral therapeutic deism, okay. And a race to the bottom. It's like lowest common denominator, believe in Jesus, whatever that means.
So okay.
It's up to you.
Okay. Now let me try to steel man this position. The historic church has done a poor job of articulating the gospel with words normal people can understand in the modern age. And as a result, groups have emerged that specialize on that front end of faith to really make it make sense and make it apply to help connect the dots between real life and what we see on the pages of Scripture. And we do that in language and in styles and with art that people can understand. And we don't worry as much about some of the theological details that are confusing to people and that they get hung up on.
Yep, that's steel, man. But then you can have a conversation. So what yeah. I said, you can't really have a conversation about.
No, you just sounded
agree
mean.
Or disagree.
Yeah, flipping around. So now I can sound mean. Let's do Anglican.
Do Anglican. Okay.
We're gonna do Anglican. You ready for the steel man?
Okay, I see if I can do steel man on this one. Let's go. Give me the Catholics.
Okay, we're gonna do Catholics.
Give me the Catholics because.
But I'm going straw.
Yeah, you go straw. I'll go steel.
Okay, straw manning, typical Protestant or evangelical straw manning of Catholic. Here we go. A bunch of medieval superstitions from a group that got hung up on a couple of ideas, a couple of corruptions early on. They made up new things. They swallowed the theological spider to catch the theological fly too many times, and it evolved and morphed into something that no longer looks like the original. It became too big, too powerful, too ritzy, and the result is that people who are in it now look to the church and Mary as their savior instead of to Jesus, and it's questionable as to whether or not they're even in the body of Christ.
Okay,
that was very mean. Not saying I mean this.
No, we're playing
it's an exercise.
A game, ladies and gentlemen. We're playing
okay,
a game.
All right.
Wait till you hear what we really think of your denomination. So, all right, okay. And yeah, I'll leave the non-denoms alone. But, you know, when people start talking like this, so they pretend that everything is uniform and monolith.
Yeah.
Like every non-denominational church in the world is awesome or garbage.
Yeah, and there probably is an expression of Catholicism somewhere that my critique
yep.
is actually sort of applicable to.
Yeah.
But to act like that is the universal expression, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so here
your
it
turn.
Is.
Steel, I'm hogging
steel
it.
Man,
you
steel
go.
Man. Steel man. The historic Christian faith comes from someplace, a real event and a real place in time that was passed on to us. The death and resurrection of Christ was passed on to us by people who observed these things. And there had to be some source of authority, and that authority has been passed on from person to person to person through the years. And without that source of authority, we don't have a pope. We have, you know, a million popes. So that's really what, you know, you Lutherans did, was you took away the pope and you gave us a million popes, every man his own pope. And so what does this really mean? How can we accurately interpret the Bible? But also to buttress it with tradition. And some things in the past really matter. And as Chesterton said, you should not move a fence until you find out what it was there for.
Hmm.
And I think there's a lot of that in Protestantism. So the one true Catholic Church is found in Rome, although we would certainly recognize our separated brethren in other movements.
Okay, so you just steel-manned a post-Vatican II version of the Catholic Church.
I did post-Vatican II, yeah.
Okay,
I suppose
right.
I could do pre-Vatican. Could I do
pre-Vatican?
It
gets confusing at that point.
It does.
Okay,
does.
We got to do things in threes or it's going to be weird. I picked one, you picked one. Luke. Who do you want us to just absolutely crucify here?
Lutherans like to argue with Calvinists.
Oh,
okay,
yes.
Let's do that. So we're doing Presbyterians?
Oh,
or just totally Reformed fair. In general?
Let's just do Reformed in general.
Okay.
They're all the same.
Well, we got to split it. So
okay,
we're going to paper.
Here.
This
ready.
Is for winner, winner gets to pick.
Picks.
No,
okay.
Winner straw.
No, winner straw. Ready?
Okay, ready? Two, three. So you win.
I win.
So you're straw.
Oh, this is great.
Okay, so I'll go first.
Okay.
Here's the steel man of the Calvinist position. The starting point of theology is the attributes of God. Theology proper informs everything. The defining characteristic of God, it's his power, it's his infinitude, it's his limitlessness. So whereas many other traditions like to start with exactly how people factor in and where we relate, instead, as Calvinists, we start with the question of the character and the authority of God. And what that says first and foremost is that he is sovereign over everything he's made. never learned anything, absolutely in control, master of time. We see time from a different perspective. And because of that, we can work backwards from his infinitude and sovereignty to understand where we fit as people. Now, at times, that might even be a little bit threatening. And when you consider it this way, we see a God who is infinite working in an Old Testament under a certain set of ground rules, covenants. That sovereign God made certain covenants and worked out of his character in the Old Testament. He does so in the New Testament, but he is the same through all of that, and there's a continuity. And when you look for that continuity, sometimes the symbols might look a little bit different, but we see him acting in the same way as the master of history. And other traditions where they run into flaws is that they overly elevate the role of the individual, individual decision-making, and individual agency in salvation too greatly to their own peril.
Okay. Straw man, the Reformed perspective. Yeah, all you guys care about is the sovereignty of God, and once saved, always saved. It's like God is flipping the cosmic quarter. Redeemed or reprobate, and you are reprobate. You're gone, and turns God into this capricious monster who doesn't really care about individuals, doesn't even love people necessarily, just his favorites.
So this is a fun exercise.
This is loads of fun. Okay, so I have a
one of the two invites conversation.
Yeah,
one of the two is just wantonly unfair. This yeah. is. None
okay,
of our
so
strawmanning was a complete
who,
picture.
Almost every Tuesday night, mm-hmm. I've got three friends from the Free Will Baptist persuasion.
Okay.
So properly Arminian, like from the Remonstrance.
Okay,
but
sure.
Baptistic. And I've met them through various things. We have a conference call. It's more or less four guys talking, supporting each other. But originally it was professional development.
Okay.
They don't like Calvinists very much.
Okay.
I mean, not personally.
That can happen.
But theologically. And of course, their straw man would be, it's just a choose your own adventure, fall in and out of salvation or whatever. And that's just not what they actually believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you end up talking about all this stuff. If any of them were applying for our clergy roster, they wouldn't have a chance. But I'm glad they're my friends. And okay. They're devoutly Christian people. I look forward to spending eternity with them in heaven, except for one of them, maybe. No, I'm just kidding.
Mercy.
But when you are clear about where you disagree, and they think I'm crazy because I'm a Lutheran. I'm practically Catholic. Right? So that's what they think. But when you're clear about where you disagree, it doesn't really highlight what you disagree on as much as if you're men of goodwill. It also highlights the small c Catholicity of the holy Christian faith. That
yes,
there's stuff we all agree on.
Yes, it does.
So when the dude says, I don't want to do that, it's Catholic. Well, the Trinity, you know, that's Catholic. You know, there's all kinds of things that are
the Bible.
Yeah, the Bible. You can't just throw stuff away because it fits this label. So to have these conversations, I think, is really, really helpful.
Well, and anything from the entire history of the church that squares with scripture and articulates or expresses the historic Christian faith handed down to us is fair game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know people from the evangelical tradition, you know, I'm evangelical free church historically, which is fairly Lutheran mm-hmm. in its origins with a dash of pietism
yep.
and a dash of feisty, leave us alone government
yeah.
mingled in there.
And we've got that too.
That's true. Yeah. I like you got free
yeah,
in the name
free,
also.
The same thing.
And with a healthy dose of emphasis on the historic, you know, Christian thought, the life of the mind. I really like that about the EFCA. I'm not trying to pick a fight with my friends
no.
in my own group, but I don't think EFCA is as committed to that or as defined by that as it has been in the past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, groups ebb and flow, whatever.
We do.
So, but I have people who I know from in those circles who would say, well, you shouldn't do Ash Wednesday. Like the Catholics thought of that. Well, yeah, but we're the Catholics. We're Reformed Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that didn't need to be reformed, I would think that's still me.
Mm-hmm.
The things that needed to be reformed, like, say, indulgences that you can buy to fund churches. Okay, well, I have a real problem with what was happening in the Catholic Church in the early 16th century. Mm-hmm. I'm not over that. I still think that was deeply flawed and needed reforming. Okay, well, if I took that with me, which is clearly antithetical to scripture and the gospel, well, then that wouldn't make any sense. But if I take with me the Catholic stuff that squares neatly with the themes of the gospel, even if it's not a practice specifically outlined in scripture, mm-hmm. I feel like there's plenty of liberty in that. My point mm-hmm. is that if we go whole hog straw man, that is a pre-internet way of thinking. Because you could get away with it. And there's no smartphones. You're not putting any of this on the internet. There's no social media. So you catechize your people to resist when they casually run into other people in their lives who
so
are from other
bad.
Groups.
Just that's bad.
It's bad. Yep. Then MySpace happens and Tom ruins everything. We're all in a room together. And so we all just blissfully went onto the internet and typed things that worked in the age of the pre-internet. Mm-hmm. Here's why Catholics are all irredeemable idiots.
Yeah.
This is what we say. Well, and then Catholics who are smart and competent and humans come along and they're like, but I don't think any of the things that you just said that make me an irredeemable idiot. What we actually think is this. And then what happens is there's this historic explosion in the age of social media that the scholars don't see who study history and social movements, but in the church, we see it. There's this explosion as a result. It's a confidence crisis that everybody went through at once as we emerged from the straw man age that worked before the internet into the, I guess you got a steel man at age post-internet. Now there's this crisis of confidence. Which one's real? Which one's right? Should we just ignore all theology and get rid of all our historic traditions mm-hmm. and mush it all into one thing? Or should we all become Orthodox because it's even older than Catholic? Or should we? Nobody knew.
Yeah.
And it created this panic. And I honestly think a lot of the politics even of the last 20 years, though missed by political scientists, still, I think a lot of our political issues can be explained by this subtle conscious or a crisis of confidence that happened from Christian theists having to take their game out onto the internet and having it really not go well.
Yeah. So to do reductio on our straw man, expose mm-hmm. it to the real idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well
no,
said.
That's really good. That's good. The Kool-Aid man.
Ha. Huh. We did have a pin in that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have the steel man, which is our ideal in any discourse, but in internet discourse is kind of what we're talking about here. We have our steel man, do our very best to articulate our best take about what someone else actually believes. We have our straw man, that's our hey boy. Our whole play there is to make it look as weak as possible so we look smart. It's embarrassing when you get caught.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get your Kool-Aid man. And the Kool-Aid man is... Do you remember the commercials?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, so you know it's exactly great. What I'm talking
yeah.
about.
You have I like remember a, the song.
How did the song go? I don't remember
I,
the song.
I can't.
No, sing like, it. Perform it immediately.
Okay, let's see if I get this. Okay, hold on. It's like Kool-Aid Man, the Fresh Kids. I don't have the melody in my head. But
dude, that was catchy. You were really close.
I'm sorry. I'm really bad. Okay, I also remember
it would have been better if you just made stuff.
Right. Oh, here
Kool-Aid
we
Man. You oh, yeah.
How about this? AI could generate a Kool-Aid jingle
absolutely.
From 1978.
But I'd never believe it.
Narrated by Bill Cosby.
Did he do the Kool-Aid?
No, he did the Jell-O
pudding
cups,
pops, right?
The pudding cups.
Pudding great. Something.
Because yeah, you're slightly younger you picture than me, that. Right?
Yeah, it so sounds you, right. My growing remember? Up is late 80s, early 90s.
Okay, so yeah, so mine was late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm still cool.
Yeah, you're cool.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
okay, so you got the Kool-Aid man. That's just bursting through.
And just yell things about your opinions at the internet. Sometimes we call this saying things at people.
Mm-hmm.
Words. But you remember the ads, right? Like these
Breaking
kids would just be at home being children in an environment their parents had carefully crafted for them. It's innocent. It's wholesome. It's clean. And then this giant Kool-Aid monster, like literally a pitcher of Kool-Aid with a smile and a face and big white gloves would explode through walls.
And the walls are just shattered.
Just destroying homes. Literally, maybe it's a metaphor.
Maybe.
And he'd come in and he'd you know, give the kids this poison
sugar
drink. And they just loved it. And so, yeah, the Kool-Aid man has no regard for what damage you're doing. The Kool-Aid man has no regard for collateral damage, no regard for the well-being of who you're talking to. It's just, I have a thing. Was I invited? No, but I'm here.
So here I
Everything
am,
you're doing is done.
So it's not faithful presence. It's not cultivate, dwell on the land and cultivate faithfulness. It's not buy land in this captive place and improve it.
No, no, it's none of those principles of exile that were, you know, lined out for Jeremiah about how to handle your business. It's unshrewd. It's foolish. It provides no value to the person you Kool-Aid man at. It is performative.
Yeah.
And there's a pressure. I mean, you see it, right? The pressure to say performative things on the internet.
Okay. So where I catch myself, I think if I'm talking about particularly inside, you know, C.S. Lewis's house, you know, inside the house with many rooms and halls and all that, if I catch myself with a pressure to defend my group's market share, that's where I just need to stop. Okay, if my discussion with the Calvinist is to preserve my right to exist, or the Church of the Lutheran Brethren, are you familiar?
No, I don't know this group.
It's a cousin. They're so close to us, right? They're in Fergus Falls. Some of their students come here. Biblically conservative group. Different polity. There are some differences or whatever. When I was doing doctoral work at Fort Wayne, they'd ask me about how are the Free Lutherans different from the group in Fergus Falls? And it's just so laughable. They're so close that, well, I said, well, and my joke, you got to joke with people when they're not from your denomination. Said, well, to you, we'd be indistinguishable. But we know. And we're just a little bit better. So and you'd laugh about it. And they would say that too. We're very, very close. But then the next step of that is, well, why don't you merge then?
Yeah.
Well, why do we have to do this?
Tease that out a little bit. Why don't you merge then?
Why don't we just...
What are the actual reasons that we don't start lumping similar enough things?
Yeah, well, I think it's market share. I think it's like we need to be distinct. I think we have a desire to be distinct. And there's no purpose emerging. You can have two gas stations on the same corner and be just fine. But you don't have to inherently say you should come here because, you know, we're better and they're losers. And I think you get into straw manning when we have to make an artificial distinction between the two. And there really are differences, but I think the biggest barrier to things like that would be the interpersonal and the tribal and the, you know, us versus them, even if we kind of like you. That's like, you know, I kind of like you, but I don't really want to necessarily have to go to your church and vice versa.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. But when I catch myself needing to preserve market share, because if I don't, our little church group of 250 churches and our Bible college and seminary are just going to go away and be irrelevant.
Ah.
And then what will I do for a job?
Yeah, it's a low blow. So you're talking about my college and my seminary.
Oh, no, I'm not. Actually,
I'm joking. I know you didn't mean to, but you accidentally did.
But that fear, fear that we have, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy almost. Because you build the siege, the walls to keep out the enemy, and everybody dies. It's a palliative approach to life. And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The gospel is an offense. And I'm not offensive, although it can be, but it's to go out, it's to go forth, and that's the job of the church. But now you're interviewing me, so.
Well, that happens, and that just, so if I've a podcast
smart,
goes well, that happens
my
at some point.
Sitting here.
Okay.
After all that today. Okay, so you gave us no new information. None of that was new to me. In fact, I didn't even try on the songs and the pictures and the videos on which one's real. Because it's impossible. To me, it's impossible to know.
Okay. So you're talking about when I put up three different songs and asked you to tell me which ones, if any, were AI.
Yeah. I had no clue.
Okay.
I didn't even participate hardly.
I gave you two tweets that were very similar.
Yes.
Said one's real, one's fake.
And either one of them could have been real.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Indistinguishable. I don't care how smart you are.
Two videos.
Yep.
Created by, you know, one of these is created by a simple prompt. I was tricking you. They were both created by a simple prompt.
Yep.
They were both fake.
Yep.
So, the room did not do well on those.
No, they didn't. Okay, so even though this was not new information to me, I found myself being anxious and like, I don't like this world.
Why?
I don't like this reality. I don't like this.
The exercise or the reality?
The exercise was great. I whispered to the guy next to me, Andy, actually, I whispered to him. I said, I wish he were paranoid and delusional. But I think you're accurately explaining the world that we live in right now.
The post-truth AI stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned, though, you really did a good job of bringing it back around. Fear and despair is not the not the telos here. So
yeah,
talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, so I did four talks, one last night, three today, talking about digital wisdom. The idea, I mean, the way we came at it is we looked at Nehemiah as a biblical example of a man who understood his times and took a big swing, made the effort to understand it, navigated the conversation of his day, and took a big swing to try to do something redemptive with his moment on the stage of redemptive history. So we looked at a bunch of different elements of that, kind of trying to follow Nehemiah's example, you know, seeking digital wisdom for the nurturing of the soul and the nurturing of our witness. In the course of that, one of the things that, you know, in this day and age, I don't see how you could skip is the post-truth elements of the internet. Some of that is just inauthentic activity conducted by people, where one person can control the strings of what seems like 1,000 people and use bot accounts to create the artificial impression of consensus. Another way inauthentic behavior happens is money exchanges hands, and things that are really an undisclosed ideological sponsorship are treated as though this is just the obvious truth. How could people not believe this? But then the third element of the post-truth internet that's very difficult to navigate is the AI-ification of everything. As of 2024, 51% of traffic on the internet is said to be non-human. Well, in 2024, you could look at it with your eyeballs and detect it still. Now, here you and I are having this conversation quarter one of 2026, and I ran that experiment with The Room, which The Room, you know, The Room failed horribly. And I would too. I had the luxury of making the test. That's the only reason I passed it. But I ran that experiment to demonstrate, even just 2 years later from 2024, you can't tell now in 2026. You can't tell what's a real song and what's a fake song. You can't tell a real political rambling Kool-Aid man tweet from a fake Kool-Aid man tweet. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell a video clip from a movie that has actual human actors and one that doesn't. I mean, sometimes you'll catch it, but the examples I gave you, you couldn't.
No, you couldn't, really couldn't.
And so you said, I mean, you mentioned, I don't know if you said the word existential or what, but you expressed like...
Dread.
Why?
Yeah. I don't want to live in that world.
What's wrong with it?
I don't want to be able to be fooled so easily. Hmm. It bothers me. I'm a black and white guy, always have been. Truth is a correspondence to reality. Oh, okay. So when you were making videos, that stage of your pastoral career,
yeah,
I was teaching apologetics. So 10 years earlier, talking to my congregation, church plant, doing apologetics without really trying to, just weaving it into sermons, textual sermons.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So one of the things I remember doing, talking about truth, the concept of truth, I took a screenshot of Wikipedia, and Wikipedia at the time said there is no one true definition of truth that is agreed upon by a majority of philosophers or thinkers.
Boy, that's...
How can that be, right? So
slippery.
Truth is correspondence to reality. That's a necessary definition of truth. So I noticed when I was teaching here, I would talk about the correspondence theory of truth and how that's fought against. And I went to Wikipedia to update the screenshot. And leading the way, as it is today, truth is a correspondence to reality. Okay, so it's back. The Hegelian method got us back on track, right? So for about 13 seconds, I was really set at ease about this. Well, mm-hmm. This is nice. Sanity has prevailed. And then I thought, oh, truth is no longer a social construct. Reality is a social construct. Yeah. So choose your own. So you can identify as, that's probably the crassest presentation of it at the fruit level.
Yeah, and that's largely been debunked, dismissed.
Yeah, but now we can. Does it even matter? Oh, you had the Harry Reid interview.
Yeah,
I had never seen that. That's shocking. Just like, well, true or not, I don't know. He didn't get elected, did he?
Yeah.
Talk about crass pragmatism.
Yeah.
So
about as crass as it gets. I'm with you. I don't want to live in that world. I don't want AI to be able to fool everybody. I don't want to eliminate all of the work and people that go into the creative process of making art, making words,
producing podcasts.
Yeah, at some point it'll be indistinguishable. That ain't good. And at some point too, I mean, this is a little bit ancillary, but at some point it becomes inbred. If it's all learning off of itself, where do new ideas, where does new art come from? I don't know how that works. The point is, I'm with you. I don't like it. I'm not enthusiastic about living in that world. But for me, it goes even deeper. A little bit vulnerable here. I feel like my faith is pretty dang sturdy at this point. I'm in. I've been in for a long time. Yeah, I believe this stuff. But what exactly this is and how exactly God is doing it, I've never known that for sure. Like, where are we right now? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Plymouth, Minnesota, in this room. Yeah, but where are we? Earth. Okay, yeah, but where's that? Well, it's in the solar system. Where's that Milky Way? Well, where's that universe? Okay, but where's that? Like, where is this? Where does God have it? Is there some larger physical context where you could orient things on a map beyond reality as we know it? We at least know God is beyond reality as we know it. He was here before he called things out of non-existence into existence. So where is this? And how does it work? What are the nuts and bolts of the invisible things? What are the tools that God deploys to make this? Did he just make it out of words and it feels real and the things we can detect are the tools, or are there parts below that? Mm-hmm. There are real questions about reality that philosophy, since the dawn of time, has considered. Now we've thrown this insane thing into the mix, that being realities that look like reality, but people had no part in it. Mm-hmm. And I really mean that. I mean, increasingly, you know, large language models are being written by their predecessors, not by the people who wrote their predecessors.
Yes.
And these new, you know, each generation of LLM is getting written quicker by, again, its predecessor. That's weird. That feels like self-replication. It's not in the organic sense. It's not in the how God made things sense. But it feels like it practically. So, yes, I will admit into this microphone, I'm rattled on a philosophical existential level by AI, not because I think it means there is no God. It makes me more sure there is, because it's a product of us imitating his creative and cultivative impulse.
It doesn't answer the why. It doesn't answer the beginning. It doesn't answer the destination. All those things that bring meaning and purpose to human life. My concern about AI is actually the transhuman impulse behind many of its many of its proponents.
Yes.
We didn't get into that with the students here today, but you did talk about, I think if we give you another session on AI, you would have, but you gave us some really practical guidelines on this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That wasn't in my question list, but really simple and helpful.
Well, that's good to hear. They were meant to be very practical. And I suppose whether you're talking about the phones, whether you're talking about AI, whether you're talking about anything that involves our digital lives, the deal that I was saying about AI is very important. It is tempting to despair. I remember reading a letter by, I think it was John Quincy Adams, as the train was becoming onboarded, as like, when that started, went from a concept to becoming kind of a mainstream idea. He wrote an editorial or something. This is a long time ago. I might be thinking of a different president. I think it was John Quincy Adams. And he wrote this editorial, and I remember him using the phrase, you know, if men were meant to travel at breakneck speeds of 15 miles per hour, we would have been imbued by our creator with the ability to do so. And this changes it. And you can see, like, look, yeah, when I read it as a kid, I laughed at him. You were so simple, you primitives back then. We're so enlightened with our technology now. But now I feel him a little bit. I'm like, yeah, but, well, this is a guy who really had his toes in the sand and knew some stuff about the world. And he could see this is going to change things. And he was right. I mean, for crying out loud, it caused us to divide up our continent into different time zones.
Yeah.
That was unthinkable before that. Well, you got people like you and me and the kids in the audience today thinking about, what does it mean that I can type a one sentence prompt and make a rock song I would listen to and wouldn't know was fake if I hadn't prompted it? Mm-hmm. What does it mean that that looks like a real movie, but no humans were involved? What does it mean that I can't tell whether humans or robots wrote these tweets? Well, yeah, it raises some questions about transhumanism. It raises questions about simulation theory and other things that people throw out and might latch onto with AI. It's difficult. The point I wanted to drive home was, guys, this is weird. It's going to get a lot weirder before it gets normaler. But the first cause is still God. Mm-hmm. The one who made and sustains is still making and sustaining, mm-hmm. still on his throne. We've seen a lot of other weird things come down the pike that jarred the sensibilities that we had, where we kind of put things together in our brain to make sense of reality as we engage it. This isn't the first time we've been shook, but this is a pretty unprecedented one. Mm-hmm. Still, the right response is curiosity and a desire to understand what this is. Try to get your finger on the pulse of it, but not despair. Mm-hmm. A healthy skepticism, respect, maybe even fear of a few possible outcomes if handled yeah. well, sure. But despair makes no sense because God has not been unseated.
Yeah.
And that's really important. Still where we are.
That's really, really important for us as Christians to grasp, to stay in the moment, to not regret the past, to fear the future.
Well said.
But look at the redemption of Christ. Oh, that's good stuff. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, Wade.